Live from Muck's Bar and Grill in Sun Prairie, this is Kenny and Heilprin on the Wisconsin Sports Zone Network.
Happy Thursday, everybody. Welcome in. It is Kenny and Heilprin from a lively Muck's Bar and Grill in Sun Prairie. I'm Ben Kenny. That is Zach Heilprin. What's up, buddy?
How you doing?
I'm thrilled. I had the best drive over here I've had in months.
Yeah, it wasn't bad.
Not at all.
Not at all bad today.
Not at all. And there's your weather talk. And I'm actually going to put that aside very quickly tonight.
Why is that?
Well, we have a big show.
Well,
so coming up in about 20 minutes, Zach, I'm debuting a new segment.
Oh, boy.
And it's something that we already do.
Okay.
Just not officially on this show. So that's coming up in a bit. There's some schedule talk because I have said often that Wisconsin's path in football will get harder after the 2023 season ends and conference realignment happens with USC and UCLA. I wanted to go through like how much different it'll actually be, because as I did, I'm kind of seeing that I'm not wrong, but might be over-exaggerating a bit. So I want to do that, and I know that'll make you happy, but I want to start with last night. The old Wednesday night 8 o'clock tip that I know you are very fond of as someone who goes to some of the games, and I myself kind of hate, given I like to sleep and I'm up very early. But Wisconsin 64, Iowa 52, the Badgers 8-9 in conference. They finally win a game by double digits. I don't know how to contextualize how impressive that is because I feel like we haven't seen it in 3 years, frankly.
You were just waiting for Iowa to make a run at some point, right? Like, they were just waiting for them to get within single digits and make it a game, because that's just what happens with Wisconsin. And it never happened because they could not make a shot. They could – I mean, they were 3-for-28 from three. It was insane. That's back-to-back games. They're 6-for-52 from three in their last two games.
Oof.
Yes. So you think Wisconsin shooting has been bad, and it wasn't great from beyond the arc last night? Iowa is just an absolute disaster on the road. I think they're shooting like 26% from three on the road. So, yes, I was expecting Iowa to make some shots and get back in that game, and it just never happened, and Wisconsin deserves credit for it because they made plenty of shots from inside the three-point line last night on their way to a 12-point win, which I believe is their second biggest margin of victory this year.
Wow, and by far the biggest in Big Ten play, I figure.
Yes.
I should have gone back and done this. I wonder the last time they won a Big Ten game by double digits. It's probably last year, but it probably happened once or twice last year, because even those were somewhat nose.
Well, they went 18-1 in games decided by single digits.
Right. That was where they had their success.
And I think they're now 10-6 or 11-6 in those type of games,
which is pretty much their entire season. It felt like Iowa down the stretch of the game, especially in the second half, became Wisconsin. I took so much joy in watching that because I knew what the Iowa fans were going through, because that felt like what Wisconsin had always done, where they had open looks, they just didn't go down.
I think it's hilarious to think about Iowa fans and after the Northwestern game going 3-for-24 and be like, there's no way we're ever going to shoot that bad again.
It can't get worse.
It's not going to get worse. It's not going to get worse. And then like 3 days later, they're 3-for-28. And it's against Wisconsin, and you're shooting 10.7% from three. That's Wisconsin NCAA tournament-type numbers.
Those numbers were also buoyed because they made two shots in garbage time. When it mattered, it was even worse.
It wasn't good. And like Wisconsin was 4-for-18, so it's not like they but it seemed better.
Oh, it's all relative.
It seemed better because they hit three in a row.
In an important spot in the
yes.
game to build a lead. And it's not as if Iowa fans know anything about bad offenses. You know, that's where you got a feel for them.
Yeah, it's real tough.
If they hang their hat on anything, you go back to last year's team, they were an offensive juggernaut. Then they just couldn't play defense often, and then come tournament time,
well,
it didn't work.
This team averages 80 points a game. They averaged 80 points a game coming in. That was 21st in the country. And they scored 52.
I said this morning. If you remember last year's game at the Kohl Center, Iowa, Wisconsin, where the Badgers shoot the lights out, one of the McCaffreys starts to complain about Davison's kickout three,
yeah.
even though they lost by 26 or something. They were getting crushed. They went on a run late to make it a 15-point game, I think, but they got destroyed. And Keegan Murray, who was one of the National Player of the Year candidates, he didn't do anything.
No, he went off that game.
Oh, I remember him not doing much.
He had like mid-20s, high-20s.
Okay, well then I might be completely wrong, but I draw back to
that. The
game
wasn't close. I don't think the game was close, but he went off.
Okay, that might have been it, but you look at Chris Murray last night,
yeah,
who's somewhat taken the place of his brother, who's off to the NBA, 2 of 10 from the field, 4 fouls, 5 points total, 1 of 5 from 3. I mean, the biggest story to me, aside from the fact that they got a comfortable win, and Greg Gard had some great quotes after the game, which, to credit him, I think he's delivered when it comes to quotes.
Okay.
After moments this season. But the big story for me is we finally got a Tyler Wahl game. And I've always said when it comes to this team, like many people get on if Jordan Davis struggles or if Carter Gilmore struggles, they get on them and say, okay, like why aren't these guys playing better? I always sit back and say, if you need those guys to win a game, you're probably not in the best spot. That means your best players are not playing well. So it always comes down to that for me. And Crowell was in foul trouble, but we got, like, that's what a Tyler Wahl game more so looks like than what we've seen.
I thought he was so aggressive early and really taking it to the basket, and it wasn't a great start for him. It wasn't a great start for them in general. I mean, 4 turnovers in the first, what, like 4:32? It might have been 5 turnovers in the first 4:32. And Tyler, he was getting benched, and he went down and scored. He still got taken out of the game, but he went down and scored, and then he came back in the game and started out 4 for 4, and obviously his rebounding was a big part of that story as well. But the defense on Chris Murray was important. 2 for 10, 5 points, and that when you're right, one of the threes wasn't until mid of the second half. It was the type of game that you had come to expect from him last year. What did he end up being from the field?
Wall?
Because I think
he was 5 of 8.
5 of 8.
0 for 1 from 3 and 1 of 2 from the line. One miss.
5 of 8 is exactly where I believe he was at last year. That might be a little bit high. I think he was in the mid-50s shooting the ball from 2, which we know where his shots from 2 come from. They're right around the basket usually. And this year it's been a much tougher road to hoe for him inside and be able to finish. But, yeah, last night's exactly what you came to expect from him last year. Defense, rebounding, and being able to finish around the rim. And that's exactly what they needed last night. That's what he gave them.
So, Esiagen has obviously emerged as one of their best players, definitely one of their best offensive threats. And he goes for another 17 on 5 of 13 shooting, but he was pretty good from the line overall. So, like, when I talk about the good players have to play well, I think that conversation now expands to Chucky, obviously, Tyler Wahl, Crowell, and Esiagen. It's those four.
Especially offensively when it comes to Esiagen, right? Like, he's their second leading scorer. I think he ends up – I know there's 3 games left. They got how many games left guaranteed? 4 games left guaranteed. We'll see.
Plus the NIT.
Maybe if that's what they end up.
If it doesn't bode well.
Right, if these last 4 games don't go their way. But if they lose all 4, they'd be .500, wouldn't they?
They are 16 and 11.
So they'd be 16 and 15. We're not going that way. We're not going negative today.
No.
We're not doing negative.
No, I'm really positive today.
Yeah, we're not doing negativity today. So he's got at least 4 games. He's got a chance to pass Chucky as the leading scorer. Do you know the last time they've had a freshman?
He's a chance to pass Chucky?
Yes. For being the scoring leading scorer.
Wow. His volume is high and definitely high for a freshman, but Chucky's volume has been astronomical this year for obvious reasons, where they've needed someone to create shots. The fact that he could have a chance to pass him while I figure shooting a lot fewer shots, I can go find the exact stats. It's kind of remarkable.
So Chucky's shot 311 times, and Connor shot 239 times.
So that's 80 plus.
Yeah.
Around 80. Wow.
Connor's put up a lot more three-pointers and made 3 more. Looking back at this, he's 21 points behind him. So
that's
a possibility.
Doable. Oh, yeah.
It's a possibility. The last time a freshman has led Wisconsin in scoring, 1995-96. Sam Oakey.
That was before I was born.
Yes. I think everyone's fully aware of that.
I was barely an idea at that time, Zach.
Yeah. So it's remarkable. It's been quite some time, and hopefully the rest of his career plays out much better than Sam Oakey's did. Sam Oakey ended up leaving after Dick Bennett took over, and he ended up going and finishing his career at Iowa.
Oh, that I do not wish upon Connor Siegen, definitely. But, I mean, when we talk about this season, and obviously expectations weren't very high, and then they've succeeded, and then they struggled, and now they find a good win last night. What I take away from these games is the excitement of what Connor Siegen can be later in his career. And Chucky Hepburn is still young. You're obviously going to lose guys, and hopefully you'll add. But still, I think about when Brad Davison leaves, and it's cliche, and all the national guys will say, who's going to replace Davison and that. But when I think about next season and into the future and watch these games, probably the biggest piece of joy or excitement I draw is what Connor Siegen is doing.
We're being positive today, so I'm gonna let you have that.
No, you could say something.
You just never know what a team's gonna look like from year to year in college basketball or college football these days, right? Guys leaving, guys coming. It's just you don't know. So I don't want to sit there and say this is what it's gonna look like next year because I don't know that right now. I barely know what the football team's gonna look like, and that season is much, much closer than the basketball season.
You're right.
So I don't know, but if he comes back. Not if he comes back. Connor's coming back. But, like, if everything comes together the way that they want it to, yes, it has to be extremely exciting. I'm just so impressed with what he does when he doesn't have the ball.
Oh, the Kyle Korver, the off-ball movement.
Because he's not – and so we had him on the swing today, and he talked about it, and I asked him about it because I didn't want to say this to him because it's insulting. And so I didn't do it.
What, he's not a great dribbler?
He's not a good athlete. Like, he's not a great athlete.
he could dunk.
He's not a great athlete. But I didn't want to say that to him. So I asked him about the whole thing, you know, being able to move off the ball and all that good stuff. And he admitted himself that he goes, yeah, I'm not the greatest athlete, especially at this level. Like, the college level is just different. And so I have to do some different things to be able to get open. And I learned some of that in high school and being double teamed and having to find different ways. But just the angles that he does, the way that he's able to rub off screens or come off screens so tight, like it's extremely impressive for a young guy. And I think it's just going to continue to get better and better.
So I know he's a little bit younger than me, obviously.
At least 5 years.
I want to know where he draws that from. Because if like me growing up, and this is going to sound very cliche, I tried to model my game. I'm also a limited athlete. I tried to model my game after Kyle Korver, where literally before games, I would be watching how he moves without the ball and how he makes himself open when he never dribbles. Or Kyle Korver, when he was in the NBA, played for 18 years. So and that helped. I mean, I played high school basketball. I was not nearly as good as Connor Siegen, but I wonder where he gets that from. Because there could be, like, Steph Curry obviously does a great job where he could dribble, but you also see him just slither through and get open.
Do you know what he said?
Oh, you did ask him?
He finished it by saying, from Indiana. So it's kind of just in my blood. It's kind of just like I've always kind of had that, not instinct, but I've always kind of had that sixth sense and that ability as a basketball player to have a high basketball IQ. And he kind of just, you know, from Indiana, it's what we do.
Okay.
So, no, it was not something I asked. He kind of just said it. It was part of a general question, not a general question, part of a couple questions that Jesse was asking him about his shooting and, like, how he became such a good shooter and has it always been that way for him. And he said no. So he was horrible he wasn't very good, he said, as a middle schooler. And Jesse said, how did you do it? He said, 1,000 shots a day. 1,000 shots a day. And just like, did you do those all in, like, one run? And he's like, no. Usually it was like 300 there, and then I'd go and check my phone, and I'd get into scrolling, and then I'd go back and do it. But, yeah, 1,000 shots a day.
Wow.
So there are guys committed to playing basketball, and then there are guys committed to playing basketball. And Connor Siegen is committed to playing basketball.
And plus, we've had this conversation. We haven't even noted that he came off an 0-for. Like, Last game they played was one of the tougher that he's played so far.
Easily the toughest, and, I think, offensively.
And couldn't make a shot, and then obviously misses that last second one near-ish to the basket. And
missed two of them. Got the second one blocked.
So he...
Sorry, didn't mean to nitpick.
No, no, you're good. So he comes back after that and shoots it 17 times, which is positive. You want him to still have that volume and be confident enough, and then he does actually have a productive offensive day.
Yeah, I mean, so 5 for 13, gets 17 points, and, you know, you'd like it to be a little bit more efficient, I think, but there weren't any, like, shots like, what are you doing type of thing.
Yeah, I don't...
In my opinion.
I'm fine with the not amazing efficiency as long as there are those moments where Wisconsin has some momentum and they dribble up and it's a quick three that's deep. And if you're hot, like, fine, whatever, take it. At the same time, it feels like the shots always just help Wisconsin's flow when they come 20 seconds later.
Yeah.
So it's those kind of shots that I wouldn't like.
Right. It jump-started. He had the first one. Then it was Max Klesmet, and then it was Chucky right in front of the Wisconsin bench, too. So
great defense from Iowa in all those plays.
That's what they're known for. It's pretty impressive how bad they are defensively in basketball and how good normally they are offensively in basketball and how horrible offensively they are in football and how good they are defensively in football.
Yes.
It's kind of like Wisconsin. It's kind of like the opposite of Wisconsin. Like, Wisconsin's usually very good on defense in football and in basketball and offensively challenged at times. Iowa just flips it.
Until now.
Iowa just flips it.
Hopefully.
We don't know that. Iowa just flips it.
Unfortunately, Zach, last night, no Fran McCaffrey freak out.
No frantrum.
Nothing to make the headlines. So, which, I applaud him for it. For once, the opposing coach didn't go as far as to hand Wisconsin a game, which he did. He went a long way to doing that last time, let's say.
He's amazing. He is truly amazing. He had more technicals in the last week than Greg Gard has his entire career.
How many?
Two. Because he got two technicals and got kicked out of the Northwestern game.
Can you name each of Greg Gard's technical fouls?
There's one of them. There's one.
Oh, he only has one?
Yeah. At Nebraska, I think, in 2018.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah. He was asked about it.
Were at least a couple.
He was asked about it this week.
Wow.
I think it was like the day or two after Fran freaked out. And, you know.
I saw that freak out. That was good.
It was a stupid freak out. He wasn't wrong, right? Like,
sure.
It was a bad.
Well, he's never wrong.
It was a bad call. It was a bad miss by the officiating. But, my God, man, you're down double digits. You're not getting back into that game. And you're freaking out to the point where you get kicked out. Again, the official, the official was the same guy who was at Wisconsin on Sunday. His name is now escaping me, but either way, it was some bad officiating, some horrible officiating, but that dude just loses it like nobody's business. And I was asked the toughest question I've ever been asked as part of our Twitter questions for the swing last night.
I saw your tweet on it.
Whew. The toughest question. It was rank these people because people know the things I dislike. And the people I dislike, it was essentially rank these people in how much of disgust you have for them. And it was Fran McCaffrey, it was P.J. Fleck, it was Hunter Dickinson, and it was whoever decided not to count bowl stats from before 2002. And so I answered that on the swing today. It was...
Well, I would say it's the last guy, the bowl stats guy.
No, in terms of dislike.
Yeah, I know.
You're wrong.
Oh, well, P.J. Fleck.
No. You mean number one?
Yes.
Who's number one?
P.J. Fleck.
No.
Hunter Dickinson?
No.
It's Fran?
No. It's the guy.
The bowl. That's what I was saying.
Well, you said four.
No. I mean who you listed as fourth.
Yeah.
It's the bowl stats guy, then it's Fleck, then it's Dickinson, then it's Fran McCaffrey.
Why are you listing him fourth? Why are you saying fourth?
Because that was who you named fourth.
I went in reverse order.
Yes.
Yeah, sorry, my bad. I was trying to figure out, I'm like, what are you doing? No, I went in reverse order, and it was Fran, actually, was fourth. Hunter Dickinson was third. P.J. Fleck was two, and the NCAA was one.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, whoever asked it, thank you. Thank you for the content, as always. Before we get to football, real quick, the Badgers are in Michigan on Sunday. They come back, and they host Purdue, and then they're in Minnesota to close the Big Ten season. That's three games, two road games. One of the road games comes against a team where they'll probably be underdogs at Michigan. And then obviously they host Purdue, top five team in the country. I look at that and I think 2-1 and a Big Ten tournament win or two and they're in the NCAA. Is that how you see it?
I see 2-1 and one win in the Big Ten tournament. Because it'll be, if they win two, they'll be 18-12. Win one more in the Big Ten tournament, you're 19-12, 19-13, say, after losing the second game.
With some good wins, too.
19-13 is getting you in, I think.
Plus, their losses to Northwestern look pretty darn good.
19-13, 10-10 in the conference, I think that gets you in. Are you confident that they're going to get to 2-1?
No.
Okay. All right.
Not necessarily.
I
think they might have a better shot against Purdue at home than at Michigan.
I think you're walking into a little bit of a hornet's nest on Sunday because of what happened.
So do I.
2 weeks or a week ago or a week and a half ago. And just, you know, they want a piece of Greg Gard, too, and Joe Krabbenhoff happened.
We'll see if Juwan Howard can control his team because their emotions, Hunter Dickinson's emotions were running crazy. Comes out in the second half and scores 3 points.
I feel like he's gonna go off.
I'm frightened that he will. And
I'm not frightened of anything that guy does, but I think certainly there's a chance for it.
We're being positive today.
Yeah.
But maybe just everybody out there keep expectations a little tempered for Sunday.
Yeah. I think coming back home against Purdue in the biggest game of the year for them at that point is significant. You know what's gonna happen is they're gonna beat Michigan, beat Purdue, and then
lose.
Be the only second, I think, Minnesota's second conference win.
Yeah. I could see that. It might help there.
I'll say this.
Be a resume booster.
Don't want that one. Don't want to have to win that one.
No, definitely not. Flashbacks to last year in a different setting.
Yes.
All right. That is Zach Heilprin. I'm Ben Kenny. We are live at Monk's Bar and Grill.
You can't lose that game. That's the game that you cannot lose.
I agree. We're live in Monk's and Sun Prairie. The roads look somewhat fine outside. I see some flurries maybe coming down a bit. But find your way to Monk's. A lot of college basketball going on. A lot of golf going on. A lot of Aaron Rodgers chatter on the television if you haven't had enough already. But Monk's is great. The food's tremendous. Drink deals going on as well. So find a Monk's location near you. Come by the one in Sun Prairie. When we come back, little dual segment action. A new segment is going to be debuted. As I said, it's something we always do on the show. We're going to expand it. Coming up next, it's Kenny and Heilprin.
This is Kenny and Heilprin on the Wisconsin Sports Zone Network.
All right, we are back. It is Kenny and Heilprin live at Monk's Bar and Grill in Sun Prairie. Ben Kenny, Zach Heilprin. It's the football offseason, and we talked about on Tuesday. Remember, we had the discussion of so often when the Badgers tweet something out, we go with forensic magnifying glasses and forensic combs and find whatever we could find from those tweets.
I was usually talking about practice, but I think you went above and beyond in this one.
Well, so they're tweeting more. They're putting more out objectively.
Yeah. Yep.
So I thought because of all of the buzz coming out of the Wisconsin football Twitter account, we debut a segment where we react to Wisconsin football's tweets right along with all the people. Like, this is where somebody might notice something. We shout them out. There was one today, and it relates back to our discussion regarding the outside linebacker position and how many starters they could have. Did you catch this?
Your tweet, and then I went and looked the video and had to search for a while to find what you were actually talking about, because the person that you mentioned, I'll let you get into this, the person that you mentioned didn't do a single thing in that video.
No, not at all.
Okay.
He was just there. The video is of a Wisconsin safety. I forget who exactly. It was Owen Arnett doing one of the rope pull drills, and everybody was pulling him where it was a big tag team situation.
Yep.
And on the side of the video, and it was hidden for a while, but there was some significance to the lower right leg that we'll get to. But Aaron Witt. Front and center.
Hello.
And it's, so he still has a walking boot on.
What?
Oh, you didn't notice that
part? No.
So that's the problem, is I notice Aaron Witt, and he's very active. Like, he's in it, right? which would make you think he's healthy enough to be doing that. I don't know if that means football, but it means he's better than what we've seen in the past, which is great news. And I did tweet that he looks healthy, question mark. And someone pointed out that, yes, indeed, if you pause it in certain points, he is still wearing a walking boot on his right foot, which sucks.
I didn't see that either. That's a very tough scene. Yeah, he didn't do anything in that video. Like, I was waiting for him to grab it and start pulling, and he was going to be, like, the reason that they were able to finish that off.
He was just there.
Yes, he was just there.
But Hunter, he was there.
I mean, it wasn't just Owen Arnett. It was Hunter Wilder that was holding it and pulling him back. But yes, it was, and then a whole bunch of defensive guys pulling it back. I'd love to see the other side and be like, "What the hell? You guys have 8 million guys up here pulling on it? That's
like one dude is Gio Paez on the other side,
right? Right? Or like an offensive lineman just chilling there, like, just holding it through for everybody.
Would have been better. It's Longo,
right? Yes, yeah. The coaching staff. It's Longo and Greg Scruggs and Vic Nell just holding it, and being like, "What are you guys doing?
One hand.
What are you guys doing?
But listen, I know there's still the boot on the foot. Yet I think his presence there and slight activity makes me feel better than I did before I saw it. Like, if he was really hurt, he would not be in that setting.
Yeah, I guess.
I think.
Okay. Because he was not in a boot pretty much all year.
So, I think he was. He was on a scooter.
Not all year. Not all year. Sir.
No, I know. I'm sad about it. I'm thinking back to the fact that he still didn't play because I remember the decline from the scooter to the boot.
I believe he was the last one on the injury list. Like, it was, he never got ruled out for the season.
I know. I know. Every week,
there's a chance.
Every
the funny
week.
I don't mean to make light of it because it's unfortunate for him that he's been injured for the last 2 years. Because when he was on the field in 2020, late 2020, he flashed against Wake Forest. So, and I know that former outside linebackers coach Bobby April was excited about him. He wanted to see him on the field, and for him just not be able to get out there, that has to be extremely, extremely disappointing.
Yeah, I share that. I mean, my excitement for it is because of what we saw in the limited glimpse and all the talk that we've heard from all the people, like even the players that were in the room and all that he has gone through, like them talking. I think Darrell Peterson spoke about it. I forget who exactly, but spoke about how much he has gone through and still what he has the potential to do. So
I look at him and Trayvon Blaylock kind of in separate lights, because Trayvon Blaylock was in position to actually be a huge part of the defense last year. And the injury kind of hurt him. We don't know exactly what Aaron Witt's role would be. We want to see him on the field, but we don't know what the role would be. We know what the role for Trayvon Blaylock would have been last year. And if he can stay on the field, I think he's going to be another big one this year.
Spring ball. That's where those things begin to get. Maybe we get some clarity. Maybe they're doing drills. You know, we see how far along they are.
Oh, I think Trayvon Blaylock will be doing drills. I mean, based on what I've seen with some of those videos. And obviously his injury happened last spring, so he's kind of almost a year clear of it. It's not like it happened during the year. So, yeah, it's getting close, man.
I'm excited. So there's your debut of We React to Nuggets from Wisconsin's Twitter account. I wanted to pivot here for a second. So next year, you know, I actually have a thought about next year's team and what they're going to go up against that we'll get to in a bit, a little later on in the show. But the year after this coming year, 2024, USC and UCLA will join the Big Ten. Now, we don't know what scheduling model they're going to go to at that moment, but a lot of the movement around the country in the ACC and I believe the Pac-12 so far, and the SEC might be doing this in the future, I don't know, is the 3-6-6 model, where there are no divisions, there are 16 teams, and you play three teams every year, three people that are protected rivals, and then there are two other groups of six that you rotate each year playing them. So pretty much you play every team in a two-year period, guaranteed. So I saw some throwing out what it could look like for the Big Ten, and it's tough because it's a big, you know, you pull out one Lincoln Log and the whole thing collapses, where if you try to move a game or two.
Did you have Lincoln Logs growing up?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Loved Lincoln Logs.
Well, that feels like just a little old for you.
I'm an old soul.
I know you are, but it just feels old.
Oh, yeah. I like to. I would build some pretty legit structures with Lincoln Logs.
All right.
But I wanted to run it by you first. If you had to, who do you think and who would you want Wisconsin's three protected rivalry games to be?
Wisconsin's so boring because we know two of them. We know that it's that if you have anybody, ask anybody, Iowa and Minnesota are your top two. Minnesota or Iowa, depending on where you live in the state, is who you would want to be that top team. The third one is, I know what it's going to be, or likely is going to be. It's probably going to be Nebraska. I don't care for Nebraska. I don't really care to see Nebraska. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that that has not been a rivalry. Even when Minnesota wasn't winning games, it was still kind of a rivalry, and you still cared about the game and had the axe. Nebraska just doesn't have that. I know that's the team that people are going to put them with, but I just look at it and be like, nah. But then I also try and think of the other teams that you would use instead. Certainly not your Northwestern Wildcats.
No.
I do not think that that should be a protected rivalry. I could see Illinois just because of Brett Bielema and that, and Illinois kind of rising back up.
I have a submission.
But the history here, Wisconsin has enough history with a bunch of different teams to make it work, but the first two are obvious.
Yes. How about after that first two? How about UCLA?
Yeah, I don't. Okay.
So the problem with those two, USC and UCLA joining, is there's not that much history. Some of it is, some history is going to have to be made because they're going to need three games too, and they haven't played many Big Ten teams that often. I wouldn't be mad at the idea of UCLA, but I agree with you. I think Iowa and Minnesota should be locked down pat. In the third, whether it's UCLA or Nebraska or a Purdue or something. I mean,
Purdue? No.
In the grand scheme of things, though, those programs, UCLA is probably a little bit above, but it's not as if you're going to add a Ohio State or a Michigan to that.
It'd be cool if they did.
They it would
won't,
be cool,
but it won't.
And they're going to play them anyway. But
here's the thing with UCLA: there is history there.
I know the Rose Bowls. That's what I was thinking.
The Rose Bowls.
If you want to tap into anything,
and the Sun Bowl, the 2000 Sun Bowl.
Not familiar. Not familiar with that one.
You should be familiar with it because it had one of your Philadelphia wide receivers from the 2003 4th and 26 game on it. Freddie Mitchell was on that UCLA team. Him and Jamar Fletcher went back and forth, talking back and forth, back and forth. It was a fantastic. It was a good game. It was a good game. Wisconsin won, but it was a good game. Freddie Mitchell.
I love Freddie Mitchell.
I hate Freddie Mitchell.
Very inconsistent, but I love
Freddie.
So I was going through it though, and let's just say UCLA is the third for the sake of this exercise.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking of, because I've always said, like, 2023 is their best shot at winning the conference because the West still exists. And because they don't need to have a better record than Ohio State or Michigan, they could just win the West and be there in Indy. If that were to go away, and if they were to either completely reconfigure the divisions or go to 3-6-6, I was thinking of what the schedule could look like in the future, though. And the teams they're playing, like still... It still looks like what a normal Wisconsin schedule looks like. Maybe add one or two tougher games.
Ben, that's impossible. I was told that it's going to be so much different than what it is now.
Well, it is because you're going to have to go 11-1 in order to beat an Ohio State or a Michigan.
You're not
going
to have to go
11-2.
No, you're not. You're not
10-2.
You're not going to have to go 11-1 or 10-2.
If USC figures out their defense,
you're going to have to go 8-1. Or 7-2. They're not playing 12 conference games.
Yes, you're right. But I was 9 conference games, I believe it is. So
yes.
8-1 or 7-2. But you look at this year. They have Purdue. They have Rutgers. They have Iowa, Illinois, Ohio State, Indiana, Northwestern, Nebraska, Minnesota. Which is, when I say that out loud, it's like, God, aside from Ohio State, that is an easy schedule when it comes to the Big Ten. But
it feels, I mean... It's not reminiscent of 2019 because 2019 they had to play Michigan as well, but the game was at home. But it kind of is because otherwise that schedule, it had Ohio State. You had to go to Ohio State, and that was it.
Yeah.
It proved that Minnesota ended up being good that year, and you had to go up there and beat them you know, for the Big Ten West. But going into that year, it didn't appear an overly overwhelming schedule outside of having to go to Ohio State. You get Michigan at home, you get in Ohio State on the road.
Well, 2017, they got Michigan at home as well.
And didn't play anybody.
Nobody else.
Yes. That was the perfect schedule. And that you're right, that may be a better example to what they have coming this year.
But let's say the 3-6-6 is adopted, and you look at Iowa, Minnesota, UCLA every year, or Nebraska if they're the third. The other groups of six, if we were to divide it up in a feasible competitive balance kind of way, Ohio State's on one side, Michigan's on the other, so you might not be getting both every season. You're getting one or the other. Let's say USC and Penn State are split up. You could, and then down the line, there's like Maryland and Michigan State and Nebraska, Illinois. But in general, you look through and you could say, okay, every year you know you're going to have two to three gauntlet games. And it's not as if one year you'll have six and the next year you'll have zero. Like, they're not running a gauntlet every season,
right?
Which is what.
And also building in Minnesota and Iowa and perhaps Nebraska, a little bit easier than if your rivals are Ohio State and Michigan
by
and
far.
Penn State.
By far.
Like if you're Michigan State, like your biggest rivals are Michigan, Ohio State, and Penn State. They're not going to actually get those three teams. But like, if you ask Michigan, like the teams that they would say that are their biggest rivals, they would say that. They don't want those three every single year, though.
Yep.
And Michigan's going to get what? Ohio State.
Michigan State. Someone easy.
You think it's going to be someone easy?
Oh, it has to be. Because otherwise they could get screwed.
Oh, that's too bad.
Well, they're also the biggest TV brand. Where if you think about it.
The second biggest TV brand.
But you talk about Ohio State, Michigan, and USC probably as the biggest draws. Throw in Penn State. But when the TV execs, who will likely have a say in the schedule, are sitting down, they want to see as many Michigan versus Penn State games as possible.
Right. Because
that's what sells.
Yeah.
They don't care about Michigan versus Northwestern.
Right. So you think they're going to get an easy team?
I think they would have to get one more. Here's the other thing, is over time, these programs change so much where Nebraska in 5 years, if Matt Rhule is amazing, could be good.
Yeah.
And then you could look at Michigan State. Let's say something falls off the cliff there. They could be really bad.
Kind of like last year.
Yeah. Well, like when Legends and Leaders started, or when they started the East and the West, some of those premises.
Legends Leaders is probably a better example, right? They thought Nebraska was going to be good.
Yeah.
And they ended up winning the division in their second year and then getting the absolute crap stomped out of them in the championship game. But, yeah, when they went to East-West, Nebraska was supposed to uphold their end of things, and they did not. They have not. Pretty much straight since 2015.
So we could see that. I don't think we'll see it with USC because they seem pretty.
They're not falling out unless Lincoln Riley goes somewhere else.
Right. And I would figure he'd stay. It's a pretty
attractive
place.
Other than the NFL.
And become what? Cliff Kingsbury? And maybe
not
work out?
Except the fact that Cliff Kingsbury never won in college.
Yeah.
With
Pat Mahomes.
Yes.
Which is remarkable. But, yeah, like USC, or excuse me, UCLA, in 6 years could be back down to a struggling level. They just had a good season last year, and Chip Kelly seems to be pushing the right buttons. So, it's interesting. I will say, I guess, what do the paths to Indy look like? They're going to look like, I think, what 2021 looked like for the Badgers. Maybe including one more tough game, where you have a good Penn State team, a good Michigan team, but maybe one of those is on the road. If Notre Dame, imagine they're a Big Ten team. It's like those three, and then a lot of other games that are winnable. So, some optimism.
Some optimism.
Going into the future. All right. That's at Heilprin. It is Kenny and Heilprin. We're live from Monk's Bar and Grill in Sun Prairie. I did have a thought earlier today about Wisconsin's schedule this year, though, because we could talk as much as we want about how manageable it could be. But one of the big question marks on the team, I think we can look forward and start to project about what they may go up against. And I want to do that next. We're live at Monk's in Sun Prairie. Find a Monk's location near you. The one in Sun Prairie is terrific. A lot of space as well. I guess people are not out on the roads tonight or today in general, which is weird because the roads seem pretty fine throughout the day, at least in my travels. That's neither here nor there. All right, we're going to step away. More Kenny and Heilprin coming up next.
This is Kenny and Heilprin on the Wisconsin Sports Zone Network.
Again, it is Kenny and Heilprin. We are live from Monk's Bar and Grill in Sun Prairie. The golf is wrapped up for the day, Zach. So for those that want to watch the Honda Classic tomorrow, Saturday, Sunday, this is a good place to go to do it.
Fantastic place. Fantastic place to watch anything. Maybe the Bucks get back for the All-Star break tomorrow night.
Giannis, things people care about.
Giannis Antetokounmpo listed as doubtful for tomorrow night with his wrist injury. He did practice on a limited basis today.
Oh, load management, Zach.
Yeah, right?
It's killing the NBA.
But hey, Bobby Portis back. Jay Crowder going to make his debut.
That's exciting.
NBA basketball getting interesting now here as March and April approach.
And I saw this is not a Bucks show.
It is not, but
it
is.
I like the Bucks. But I saw a graphic that had the Bucks not included in best odds to win at all.
What?
Which is stupid.
I saw they were second.
Oh. Well, I'll go refine the graphic.
Yeah, you
do
that.
It was circulating. Well, our buddy Grant Bills retweeted it.
That's crazy.
That's why I saw it.
Oh, our resident NBA expert.
Anyway, so.
That didn't, yeah.
Zach, I want to ask you this question.
Ooh.
What do you think one of the biggest question marks for the Wisconsin Badgers on the field this coming season? List your maybe top two or three. The biggest question marks, big picture, of what the team could look like.
Is this kind of like what we did with spring on Tuesday? Or are these bigger?
Kind of. But yeah. But it's going into something that I was thinking about today.
Well, here's the thing that I think leadership is at the top of it. Because I thought that the leaders on last year's team talked a lot, and I think guys liked them, but I don't necessarily think they were the greatest leaders. Does that make sense?
It does.
The three captains were Graham Mertz, Keanu Benton, and Nick Herbig. Nick Herbig and Keanu Benton and Graham Mertz didn't play the bowl game. They were not around by the time that actually happened. I don't fault any of them for not playing in it. But Graham transferred the other two into the NFL. Just left the team. Done. And that's not abnormal. But I think leadership is a major part of this team. So I do have a little bit of questions.
From the coaching side,
The coaching side of it, too. Because you lose. And, again, whether you like Paul Chryst or not, the players did. They followed him. They liked him. They didn't necessarily draw a line in the sand.
No.
Right?
No, they did not. There was no line drawn.
Or they drew about 15 of them and kept on going, getting pulled over them. But I think leadership is a big part of it. And we talked to Chimray Dike on the camp this week.
Yes.
And I asked them, because we asked Skylar Bell about the quarterbacks, right? And I wanted Chimray's opinion on it. And I asked him about Tanner Mordecai, because we think he's going to be QB1, right, obviously. And he said, oh, he can make every throw, he does this. But the thing that stands out more than anything about him is he's been there and done it. And you can already tell players are gravitating towards him and gravitating, pointing to him and knowing and kind of following him already, despite the fact that he's only been in the program for, what, less than 2 months?
That's exciting.
So the best example of it, and it's maybe not a great example of it, but is, you know, Russell Wilson coming in July and being named a captain like 4 weeks later. That's not what this is. That's not what I'm saying this is. But that is a good first step. So I think leadership is one of my top questions. Who are the guys that step up defensively, right? Daryl Peterson that we had on the show. Who are some of the other guys that step up? Muma and JT and Hunter Waller and Alex Smith and Arotis Johnson. Like, who are these guys to step up, and will guys follow them, and will they go along with them? I think that's a question that I have. I think they have leadership potential, but what does it look like?
I think that's an angle, by the way, that is being discussed enough.
Because people don't care about it. It's not like a...
Well, it's not at the forefront of people's minds,
right,
when the transfers come in.
And it's not the biggest... It's probably not the biggest question, but it is a question that I have had myself.
Oh, it's really valid.
That I have had myself.
Yeah. But on the field, like, speaking of defense, where on the field, Keanu Benton was, I would say, their most impactful player.
Yes.
But defense as a whole, as we have said many a time, is one of the bigger questions of, is there improvement? A lot of guys come back. What does it look like under the new coach? Is it able to really charge the team like it did in 2021? Like, can we get back to a level of defense or close to that that can be enough to bring them to Indy and win? Like, that's one of mine, at least, and the leadership is a huge part of it. I was thinking, though, what is the best offense this team will play aside from Ohio State in conference?
Jokingly, I texted you Iowa, but I don't feel like
is
Iowa's
that a joke,
the answer.
Though?
It is, because we don't, like Wisconsin, we don't know exactly what that's going to look like, but I don't think it's going to go from 121st in scoring or whatever the hell it was, really, really bad, to top 20, which...
I agree.
Yeah, so...
They could just be more competent, but...
They could be more competent. Purdue?
So I listed them, and I listed thoughts, and they all have gigantic questions. Purdue brings in a new coach, a defensive head coach, and Bromball's gone. The Hudson Card's there. There's no Charlie Jones. I love Hudson Card.
You would have taken him over Tanner.
No, I would not have.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought you were a Tanner guy. I thought you were a Hudson Card guy throughout. Oh, it's because Tanner wasn't – you didn't know that Tanner was going to be available.
I didn't know Tanner was entering the portal.
Yeah.
But Purdue, gigantic questions. Hudson Card, new quarterback. Like, we have no clue with a new coach what that looks like. Rutgers is Rutgers. I'm confident in saying their offense will not be good. Iowa, as we have said, there's a clause in the contract that they have to score points to keep the OC's job. Which,
and
by the way,
and not an impressive amount of points, by the way.
And if you are Wisconsin, do you give up 40 to them to keep Ryan Ferentz around? Play some chess, beat them like 60-55.
Right.
That would be my favorite game of my life.
Yeah,
bar none. But. Illinois, new quarterback, Luke Altmyer, comes from Ole Miss. No Chase Brown. What does that offense look like when they change things under Bielema? Ohio State's the one really good one. Indiana, they've had one good year. Aside from that, it's been struggle city over there.
With one quarterback who's now the quarterback at Washington.
Right.
And a very good.
He's incredible. Northwestern's brutal, and they brought in one transfer so far, which they need a lot more than that, I'm confident saying. Nebraska's the one that has potential to me with either Casey Thompson or Jeff Sims. Year one under Rule, a lot of transfers.
I can't believe you think Jeff Sims is better than Casey Thompson.
We'll see. It's the big award designation. But then Minnesota, Cali McManus, is he healthy? No Mo Ibrahim finally. I say this all to say, the best offense Wisconsin faces next year, aside from Ohio State, could be an Indy against Ohio State or Michigan or whoever they face. So I think when we think about the defense, it's like, who are they going to play?
Well, we also have to think about the defense and how many more snaps they're going to be on the field. Right? I mean, North Carolina ran the seventh most plays of anybody in college football last year. I don't necessarily think that's going to be exactly like that. When I was looking at Cincinnati, they were like 89, and I know there's going to be a meshing of the two offenses. It's not strictly going to be about what North Carolina did, but it's going to be a lot more plays than Wisconsin ran last year. And so if your defense is on the field more, they're going to give up more points, you would think, and more yards. And so while they may not face great offenses, they're going to be on the field more. And if the offense, Wisconsin's offense, stalls or goes quick three and outs, you're putting your defense in a really tough spot.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I guess I think we're going to have to draw a line between efficiency and, like, straight points and yards, because the more plays they run, the more points they'll score.
The yards per play, I think, is an important one, right?
Yeah.
And they've been top 20 the last 4 years, including being number one in 2021. But, yeah, I think that's fair.
So,
but if you're also on the field more, you're going to get more tired.
Exactly.
And you would think that
that's true.
Potentially more big plays allowed.
I agree with that, definitely. Yeah, I think it's interesting. It's something I want to expand upon as we get throughout the offseason, because they could go up against some really good defenses with that new offense, but with the defense, I like just sitting back on late February, it's like the Big Ten West won't be very good, I don't think, but the offenses especially and the quarterbacks might not be very good. But
what?
Well, a lot can change.
The offense, the quarterbacks, the Big Ten West, has a – crap load of quarterbacks.
Talented quarterbacks.
Yes.
But the units and the quarterbacks might not be very good. Well, they're all transfers. They're all the new guys in new places.
They are.
And they could be, but I guess the point was to me that there are big questions around them.
For sure.
It's not like if Tommy DeVito came back, I'd be more confident in a guy like that than Hudson Card in year one.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah.
Until I see it. So there it is. All right, we're going to step away. We're going to close it up next. It's Kenny and Heilprin.
This is Kenny and Heilprin on the Wisconsin Sports Zone Network.
All right, we are back. It is Kenny and Heilprin live from Monk's Bar and Grill in Sun Prairie, closing it up. Big plans this weekend, Mr. Zach?
No, not at all. It's going to be horrible. I'm not doing anything. I'm going to be thinking about what I'm going to do next week for the shows because you're not going to be here.
Yes, I am.
That's going to be the tough one.
I'm
going to spend all weekend doing that.
I'm going out west for a couple days.
Skiing. A much earned vacation.
And then I'm going to the southeast, I guess.
Myrtle Beach?
For a couple days to play some golf.
Sorry, I didn't mean to out your location. I feel like everyone's gonna be swarming you now down there.
Yeah, no, I don't think anybody will notice me there. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it, but I might tune in. I might listen to the shows. I might call in if something smacks me in the face, some thought on the airplane.
You're more than welcome to. If I can figure out how to answer the phone back at the studio, we'll get you on.
So Thursday with Bill Nagy.
That's the hope.
Yeah, hopefully. And then we'll see. Stay tuned for it. Badgers obviously in action coming up on Sunday against Michigan. See if they can do the improbable, prove us wrong. Go into the end of the season and make a run at the tournament. Looking forward to that. To everybody else, I'll talk to you in a week and a half. Thanks for hanging around, everybody. See ya.